All right, welcome to Chef and Automate to Migrate here, cooking up some awesome DevOps here for this episode. So we want to give you lots of great information here. My name is David Tessar. I am a senior technical evangelist here at Microsoft focused on DevOps.
And my name is Andre Elizondo. I'm a partner evangelist at Chef, also focused on Microsoft and DevOps and Chef and how they all kind of fit together.
Cool. So we want to remind you that if you have questions, you can interact with us in the chat window down below for Channel 9. You can also tweet hashtag TalkDevOps to ask us some questions in that way. Cool.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, or if this is your first episode, you know, Chef has really been a leader in the DevOps movement and really as an automation platform fitting into that movement. Right? We were born in the cloud era, and because of which, typically when people think DevOps and they think cloud, they think Chef. Right? And Chef as a company, you know, we've really expanded to you know, partnering with companies like Microsoft, especially with the new open source initiatives. There's been 20 million different downloads of Chef. Chef being an open source tool, it's great to really get everybody using Chef in interesting ways. Over 500,000 different cookbooks downloaded per month. And we have over 60,000 registered community members that are, regularly interacting with the community, contributing, all sorts of levels.
Cool. So on the Microsoft side of the house, we have been in the cloud business before there really was such a thing as cloud, right? We, in 1989, we opened our first data center, and many of you have been trusting us for a long time in the cloud with things such as Windows Update and Hotmail, which was started in 1996. But the reality is, right, today we have a huge portfolio of cloud services, 200 plus cloud services, and we're investing billions of dollars every year, really, in data center building out data centers all around the world. We have more data centers than AWS and Google Compute Engine combined with 24 regions around the world. So a really short little bit on Microsoft and our cloud services.
Great. And one of the really important things of, how we, Chef, view, the influence of Chef in our industry is that the most enduring and transformative companies, will use Chef to become fast, efficient, and innovative software-driven organizations. And I'm sure, David, you can speak to this as well, as companies and people, really, in general, start embracing DevOps, they really become faster, they become more efficient, and, it makes you love your job a little bit more, right? And so that's really a key factor to why we try to get everybody using Chef in interesting ways, especially in interaction with things like Azure, right? Things like the cloud.
DevOps is not really of if or, should we do it or not. It's a question of when.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely. And so, one of the things that we like to do is really highlight the three important key factors in really what makes a successful DevOps organization, right? And so, to embrace DevOps as you develop your infrastructure and you develop your applications, you really need to be able to ensure that all of your deployments and all of your infrastructure are verifiable, they're repeatable, and you can interact and change them in a very safe manner, right? And so that makes really those key ingredients below. So cloud, definitely embracing things like spending less calories on infrastructure, right? So gone are the days of racking and stacking a bunch of servers to increase capacity, right? And so embracing things like Azure and being able to, hit an API and get resources is a key factor in, really enabling a DevOps, practice, right?
Yeah, and this slide says the right way to DevOps, but there, I would say this is one, infrastructure as code, configuration management, we'll explain more specifically what those are, but those are some very key DevOps practices to get you moving towards DevOps. Certainly there's a lot more to DevOps, which is outside of the scope of this course today, teams and formations and metrics and culture and all these things, but I digress, so we'll keep going. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. But yeah, so cloud, automation, and culture. And really culture is that piece that really allows people to interact better with each other, and we have some more content on that a little bit later. But you know, these are the really key pieces that when you think DevOps and you think how do we embrace DevOps, you know, we think of cloud automation and embracing the culture, right?
Totally. Okay. When it comes to cloud computing, I think it's really important here because we're talking about migration and migrating to the cloud. And you know, most of you have probably seen this for a long time now. You know, what is IaaS versus PaaS versus SaaS? In the context of what we're talking about today is primarily migrating virtual machines to you know, or bare metal to IaaS, right? And so it's important to point out that, you know, when you move to, just because you move to, let's say, a VM in the cloud, doesn't necessarily mean that you have all the full benefits of everything in the cloud, everything that is available with like a PaaS or SaaS, but just setting that kind of context, right? So there is some advantages, of course, to IaaS, which you can see there, where, you know, we have the virtualization, the servers, the storage, and the networking, right? And the capacity is there, and being able to provision on demand and not having to manage a full-blown, you know, kind of underlying physical infrastructure. So if we will go to the next slide, you know, there is some context here. So Microsoft does have some tools to help you kind of what I'll call a lift and shift scenario for migration, which is really taking kind of that those core VMs that you have and migrating those up to Azure as a VM in IaaS. And so one of the options that we have there is you know, having Azure Site Recovery is the primary product that we offer to help you with this. Right now, you notice in the slide that I kind of put the little parentheses on the top there, which says protect and migrate your, in quotes, VM-based applications, because it is very much tied to virtual machines. And whether those are, you know, Linux or Windows doesn't really matter too much. But, you know, the underlying platforms, you know, ASR or Azure Site Recovery does work with a number of different kind of host platforms. So Hyper-V is one, System Center is another. We actually have integrations for helping with that on VMware, as well as we have some tools with AWS migrations to with like EC2 instances and such to over to Azure as well. It's important though to point out though with all of these kind of three options that you have here that it is very much like I mentioned, take your VM, however it is, and just take that and kind of just move it right up to Azure in an IaaS setting. Now there's some certain stipulations and changes that are going to be a little different, right? Of having, you know, VMware or EC2 or, you know, just a Hyper-V VM running natively to what Azure has. And but effectively though, you are, you know, not doing infrastructure as code. You're just right. Taking it and moving it up there.
At that point you're moving to the cloud, right? You're not really designing or architecting for the cloud, but you're, you know, if you happen to be getting rid of a data center and you need to get those VMs off there as quickly as possible, it's a great scenario.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why on this slide, you know, we don't primarily advertise this as a migration story, although you could use it for that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's primarily about a backup and having a synchronous replication story. Now, you know, the scenario is, well, my on-premises dies, you now have the whole thing running in Azure. Well, guess what? That's kind of a way to migrate in a way.
At the end of the day, you still have some hardware somewhere, right, that you can use.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Okay. So the next thing that's really important to point out here, very relevant for our discussion today, is infrastructure as code. What does that mean? Well, at a core essential thing here, you know, ideally your dev and your ops folks will work together to create code. And that code, once you define things in that code, that's going to tell you what the infrastructure is, as well as the configuration of that infrastructure. So when you go and, you know, set that and provision that it's going to create the infrastructure from nothing, configure that infrastructure from nothing, and allow you to put and host your applications on top of that infrastructure, right? So that's very different, right? That's very different than I take a VHD or a VM and just say, move it, and now I don't have to manage that underlying IaaS stack, right? We go from nothing to full, you know, the infrastructure exists and it's fully configured and it's all defined in code, right? So it's a very different concept than that.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely embracing more of a repeatability to how you provision infrastructure, right? Yeah. And you know, it brings quite a lot of value. And you can also do things like measurement of like how your deployments happen, you know, how people are interacting with your code. And so, you know, really at the end of the day, infrastructure as code has a lot of benefits that come with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a foundation, right? Because, you know, with no longer is there, it works on my machine and not yours. It's, I have the ability to recreate in seconds or minutes from nothing the full infrastructure that's needed to run my application. And your developers and ops people have a common language that they can speak together, right? And it can be audited, right? I mean, if you need to make a firewall change or you need to, you know, make any little modification to the infrastructure, it's right there in the code. And when you put that into a full deployment pipeline, it's very powerful as a collaboration tool and kind of a core, I would argue, DevOps practice that you really want to enable.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It really embraces that safe, like,
yeah.
how people are able to make changes without having to worry about breaking things, right? And being able to fail quickly.
Yeah, to make the connection here for today, right? I mean, for Chef, that's going to be a chef recipe, and then test kitchen and the provisioning drivers, right? Those are all kind of things that work together to help you enable infrastructure as code.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, and then the next thing that's also important to point out, because sometimes there's confusion, right? Configuration management, what is that? And we'll explain how this kind of connects together. Configuration management, typically what you do is, you know, you're going to have, let's say, a virtual machine in this case, and that virtual machine is going to have some form of agent on it of some type. And, you know, once that agent's on there, it's going to check and enforce or audit some type of configuration.
Yeah.
So when you have that on there, it's going to then report up to some form of management server or service and let it know or pull down and say, hey, am I compliant? Am I what I say I am? And then either auto-remediate or let you know that something's different. This is, generally speaking, configuration management, right? So you could do infrastructure as code and set everything in a one-off situation and it's there. But then if you don't have that under configuration management, you won't necessarily know, did it change? Or if I need to push things out to 100 VMs, it's not as simple, right?
Right.
Right. And so having that configuration management in place kind of helps you, you know, get that next mile of things.
Yeah. It's definitely like you said, right? Being able to do one change and have the calories spent on making that change instead of actually implementing that change, right? Which is definitely a big shift on like ensuring that change happens safely, because you know that once it happens safely once, it's going to happen safely, you know, 100 times.
Right. And that's one of those things where, you know, having that infrastructure as code foundation, and especially with what we're going to show you today here, you know, Chef having Chef server would be the management service in this case, and then having the Chef client running on there to have this configuration management solution in place along with the recipe provides a powerful solution for a lot of different options that you wouldn't get if you just take a VM and move it to the cloud.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Yep. So, so up next,
And so, you know, really, when you start embracing what infrastructure as code is, you know, again, you get quite a few things as kind of like a default with that, right? Once you treat your infrastructure as code, you could do things to your infrastructure that you would do to any other code, right? So you do things like version your infrastructure, right? When you have it defined in Chef code, you know, we would definitely recommend you store it in source control, you collaborate on it via, you know, whichever method of, branching or whatever you choose to do. But at the end of the day, what you get is a lot of consistency, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know for a fact that what you see in source code is what's running on the machines, right? And then also you're able to do things like automated testing, right? Because it is, you know, just source code. You can do things like ensure that, you know, your code's not going to break when it goes out to your machines. And then you can have that fail very quickly and be able to do things like continuous delivery on your code and ensure that, you know, it's not just your infrastructure as code too, right? With Chef, you can also do compliance as code. If you go back and watch episode one of this webinar series, we talk about, you know, how does compliance and velocity really work, right? Like, what is the methodology behind that? And how does that make, implementing a very fast way of delivering changes, but also keeping that really reliable, secure, and compliant infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. And so we at Chef have kind of defined what we would consider the Chef workflow, right? And what that is basically how do you take your infrastructure from unmanaged to managed, and how do you continue to maintain that and develop upon it, and how do you do that in a very safe and repeatable way, right? And so there's a few steps to the Chef workflow that we'd like to kind of go over here. You know, first off, you have to be able to assess your current state, right? If you don't know what your machines look like, it's really hard to be able to put that into code, right? If you don't know how to, if you don't know what you're writing as far as like a language, you can't really go out and like write a paragraph about it, right? Yeah.
And we're going to help you a little bit with that later, because our goal here is like if you're in, hey, we have this mystery fragile artifact VM that that we don't know exactly what it is and nobody wants to touch it, but we do know we deploy stuff there and there's a lot, you know.
It was John,
that's,
right?
That's kind of
it was
yeah, John. That is John, right? Yeah, so there's that scenario. So we're going to help you start down that path of how to assess kind of where you're at.
Yeah, and I think a big portion of that too is like really the thought process, right?
Yeah.
Like thinking of how you write your Chef code and how you go through this initial step, mm-hmm. as being kind of walking yourself through what do things look like on the Chef on the system that mm-hmm. I need Chef to control,
yeah.
right? Like what's important to Chef? So obviously, you know, assessing your current state and kind of figuring out what's living on the machine now and how do you reproduce that, and then being able to build and test that configuration, right? So in this case, we're using Chef recipes as being our configuration code that's going to run on that machine and ensure that it's, you know, brought up to the standard that we've written in our code, mm-hmm. right? And this is, you know, a huge a piece of this is being able to do that, you know, anywhere from your laptop, right? Like as we'll show later, there's different tools within the Chef ecosystem that make this particular step, you know, really a great experience. And then, you know, one other thing within the Chef workflow is that once you start treating your infrastructure as code, and once you start, you know, pushing it out to your various, you know, production development environments, that you're able to collaborate and promote that code into your infrastructure, you know, with governance and approval processes, right? Like treating that like application code. If you were doing a release of your application, you would have similar processes, and so you would want to do the same thing to your Chef code, right? And then also, you know, applying that configuration, so having a method of pushing that out, and then also having a method of verifying your changes have happened, and also verifying, you know, in between, like, when were your changes deployed, getting those metrics behind it, right?
Mm-hmm. So there are some options here for a kind of partnership workflow, I would say, here.
Definitely.
And so if you... One of the things is, you know, potentially if instead of Chef Delivery, you might use something like Visual Studio Team Services. And we have Chef task integration points so that if you wanted to, you know, do some testing in an automated fashion through a deployment pipeline, right, you could enable that with Visual Studio Team Services or TFS. With Visual Studio Team Services, that's our cloud service that we update every 3 weeks. And then roughly every quarter, TFS gets that same functionality on premises. So, you know, even if you have your source code in GitHub or whatever, like you can still use our build test automation system to push Chef recipes, Chef code out to wherever you want, whether that's Azure or wherever else, using our those two kind of products.
And they're both super powerful tools,
yeah.
right? I think what it is just what feels right for you, right?
Right,
at the end of the day, if you like the way it looks or you like the way it works, the workflow behind it, you know, both tools are super powerful.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they both want the same thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then with, you know, Chef Server, of course, you can, you know, have an option to run that on Azure.
But, yeah, cool. Yeah. And to make this easier, actually, the Chef Server and the Chef Compliance image are actually available out of the marketplace, right?
Yeah, in the Azure
talked
marketplace.
About the last time.
Absolutely.
And inside of the Chef Server is actually Chef Analytics as well. So most of these pieces you can go today and go ahead and, you know, try this implementation yourself. And so as far as, like, applying, you know, how do you do a cloud migration to the Chef workflow, right? Like we were kind of thinking about this, and really it kind of comes down to three main steps, right? You have to be able to describe your current state, like we kind of mentioned earlier, and you have to be able to have that short feedback loop, right? And, you know, as David, you could probably, you know, testify to this, is like, if you make a change and you have to wait like 2 hours before you see that change, you know, pushed out and you see a breakage, you start getting tired of it. It's not really fun to do. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, a very long planned out task. And so creating that short feedback loop is a super important piece, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, lastly is ensure that you're testing on the platform that you're deploying to, right? I mean, if you're going to, you know, deploy to Azure, you shouldn't be testing on, you know, a vSphere cluster or something like that, because mm-hmm. it's not going to work
right.
the exact same way, or you're not 100% sure it will.
Yeah, and so that first step, I mean, that's kind of where probably we expect a lot of you are, is, again, you don't necessarily know, you don't have any infrastructure as code at all,
right.
And it's just this VM is running, it's working, and, you know, what do we do? How do we go from that to, you know, full, you know, infrastructure
right.
as code configuration management type of solution? So Yeah, that's what we're going to help you with. And we do have a question from Ian, which says, can the framework processes be used for things outside the realm of server migration data centers? So this is kind of what we're talking about.
So I mean, we're talking about a migration, but at the end of the day, if you apply, you know, Chef to manage anything that you can describe in code, right? So if that's anything from like system packages that we're going to use today, a file, like there's a vast community of people using Chef in interesting ways, right? And so, you know, I've seen Chef deployed almost about anywhere at this point. And so it's not really specific to running in a massive data center or just for a cloud migration. You know, we can guarantee that if you use Chef, if you have no configuration management today, you're going to be more successful and you're going to like your job more, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think any ops person really enjoys going through a 100, you know, 50 page doc and tons of steps and just to deploy something. It's like, no, you don't want to deal with that.
Or
right?
Getting woken up at 3 a.m. because somebody said it worked in development, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, so core principles, right? You need to get, you know, away from fragile artifacts and get infrastructure as code is the kind of the cure to help with that, right? It's
Definitely.
It's reproducible, it's, you know, immutable. You can blow your server away, recreate it in minutes and have it ready to go.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so we have another question from John, which says, what happens when we're finished moving to DevOps and have automated our way out of our jobs? So I will say, there's a lot loaded in here. I would say that there's never a time where you're like, done. I'm like, checkbox, I got DevOps and I'm done now, right? It's a you know, continuous improvement and it's a journey, right? So I would even say that for, you know, the everybody who's, a lot of people point to, you know, Microsoft, Facebook, Netflix, like they're still improving. They're still thinking of new ways to improve, right? You're not like arrived, right? Like it's a muscle to be built.
It's a continual process.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
For sure.
And you know, I would suggest, you know, the whole automated away your jobs thing. I would actually argue that, you know, there's, you know, automation doesn't mean your job's going to go away. Your job will likely look different, you know, and that automation piece is like, it's going to happen. I mean, honestly, so you can either be a part of that or not. And it's probably better that you be a part of that. I'd recommend looking at, you know, cross promoting here a little bit, but the DevOps Dimension episode 1, and we talked with a service engineer or just a kind of a modern ops person who's gone through a pre DevOps and a post DevOps days of what their role looks like. It's different. So anyway, let's keep going. Let's see the demo. Let's dive
sure,
in.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely. So, you know, let's try this out. And we highly encourage everybody watching, if you have questions, please feel free to tweet out to Talk DevOps, right? And so we'll continue to handle questions. Please feel free to ask your questions as you think about them. And so what we're going to do is we're going to try this out in a scenario where, you know, we have our application, right? And it's called Parts Unlimited. Maybe if you want to talk about, like, what is that application?
Yeah, sure. So Parts Unlimited, there's actually two versions. There's a Parts Unlimited MRP app and a Parts Unlimited app. The Parts Unlimited is and this whole scenario is modeled after the Phoenix project, where there's the Parts Unlimited project that's in there. And the MRP was kind of the outsourced application, right? It's the one that somebody else has control of. We're not really sure what it looks like. And it happens to be really nothing Microsoft. It's, you know, a Ubuntu Linux VM running Tomcat and Java and MongoDB. And the only thing that really is Microsoft is that, it happens to run on Azure. So that's kind of the foundation for our demoscape here. But you could assume that you know, that Ubuntu VM is that VM in your data center that is like, we do stuff with it or we don't touch it. We're not really sure how it's built.
Built you by know, John.
Yeah.
John made it about 5 years ago.
That's
John
right.
left the company. We don't really know what it does, but we tried to take it down one time and it kind of broke everything.
Yeah. We really don't like to deploy updates to it because things go
still
bad.
Still running like Ubuntu Hardy.
And our weekends are shot, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so the first thing that we need to do in this scenario, right, is we need to be able to describe our current state, right? And there's a few different tips to be able to help you out with this. And by the way, if you want to be able to go do this tutorial on your own, it is hosted up on GitHub, right? And there's a hands-on lab to kind of walk you through individual pieces that we're doing today. And then there's also some content on learnchef.com. If you were to go there and select the scenario you'd like and you know, really learn more about Chef. But the first thing we're going to do is we're going to, you know, get into that system, right? Like, it exists today, so we have it in our test scenario. And, you know, we're going to kind of see what that system looks like, right? And so let's go ahead and
So yeah, to be clear too, that HOL is not going through these steps specifically. It's kind of like, hey, here's what a Chef server on Azure looks like, as well as how to kind of deploy that and have the server and the nodes in Azure being all provisioned. So it's not necessarily a one-to-one mapping, but it definitely gets you more familiar with Azure and Chef for sure. So
let's just get that going.
Yep.
Interesting time to have
that's fall, part,
right?
That's part of the
part
live.
Of the demo,
it's
yeah.
It's live.
Let's do it live. Let's see.
So we have, to set the context here, we have this VM running, and so it's running with a Vagrant driver here. But for all intents and purposes, you could assume that's bare metal server or just a VM running on your platform of wherever it happens to be running for that scenario that we're talking about.
Yeah, so this VM is running locally, so we're going to go ahead and hit localhost and try to hit the endpoint of our application.
There right? we go. So. Yeah, so that's our MRP app that we don't really know. We know it's got a web front end, and it probably has Tomcat or something, but I don't really know all the bits and pieces. Right? It's just this thing that's going and it's working. Right,
right, it kind of works. We can click through it. It's pretty slow. We probably should improve the hardware, but we're kind of scared of it. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And so, the first step is, a lot of companies, really most people, I would say, the first step to kind of figuring out how to describe your infrastructure as code is start looking at your documentation, right? If you have documentation, usually that's kind of how those servers are built. Kind of dig in there and see those kind of things that you might need, right? So like in our case, we happen to have pretty verbose like documentation here for our Parts Unlimited app, but not everybody's going to have
this. Everybody's
going
to have that. Yeah,
right.
you may not have a build guide for your server, because if you did, then that would be an awesome place to then put that into code. But you might have, like, for instance, a release note thing. If you have that 40-page guide on how to push stuff to this VM, that might provide some clues as to what's on the machine as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I mean, we can also do things like if we were to log into that VM, right? So in this case, we're using Test Kitchen to create our scenario, which we'll talk a little bit about more later. But we can log into the VM, and we're just going to check some processes, kind of see what's running, and start using that to kind of dig down what we need to start defining, right? So let's just kind of take a look. All right, we can see.
So you typed that really fast. What was the command you just typed there?
Yeah, so for anybody who's a Linux expert, this kind of just came by,
right.
by
yeah,
default.
Just so
but,
you know, yeah.
Yeah, but we just write... Right, we're doing top here, right? And that's
top,
just going to look at the currently running processes and kind of sort them by whichever ones are taking up the most memory or CPU.
Right.
And so we can kind of see by just running that, like we've got Mongo running here, we've got Java running, right? So
yeah.
We can kind of start digging out like what are the kind of things that we're going to need to describe.
Yeah.
Right.
So we now know, hey, oh, well, this thing looks like it has a MongoDB, looks like it's running some Java, looks like it's running Tomcat.
Right.
You could do the full list to start to go through the whole thing if you really wanted, right?
Yeah, we can like look at IP tables rules or whatever like that, right? We could start doing the kind of progression.
Okay.
As far as like what's defined on this machine,
what ports are open, those things are important to know. So once we get kind of past that, what are some other places where we could kind of help people get started, as opposed to, oh boy, I need to learn Ruby and put this into some code.
Right. Yeah. Well, first up, I would definitely recommend everybody who wants to begin their Chef journey. Absolutely first step, go to Learn Chef, right? LearnChef.com is where we're putting a lot of our calories to make Chef a really easy to use experience from the get-go. And then, there's also additional resources like we have training or the IRC channel. There's multiple different open source users out there that are continuing to, build the community and assist others that are beginning their journey, right? I know myself and a bunch of my colleagues, we love, reaching out to people on IRC or different means of communication with our community and really seeing kind of the light in people's eyes open up, right?
Yeah. And there's the supermarket, right? That
has some
predefined stuff too that people might go to find things or patterns that might already exist there.
Yeah, so there's supermarket.chef.io is our main community site as far as distributing code, right? So if you go to the supermarket, you can see, what are the most featured cookbooks. Not everything is maintained by Chef the company. There's actually the majority of it is maintained by community contributors, right? But here you can go and kind of see if somebody's built something for the application that you're already using, right? Like I would say the majority of applications that are running today, people have, started building automation around it, and you know, it's become successful, so they start communicating it to others.
Yeah, so like for instance right now, I mean, I'm sure, I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing that if we typed in the search box like MongoDB, there's probably some recipes that are already there that help you define Mongo.
Right.
And so, you know, there's stuff, there's already kind of templates here to get you going to define what you're trying to look at.
And at the end of the day, right, like, these can also be used more as like quick starts, right? So even if you don't use the code directly, it might be able to give you the knowledge or give you kind of the direction as far as like, what does a really good cookbook look like? Yeah. Right? And we've started to kind of, you know, branch out in the community and start defining those community standards as far as what do we consider a very good cookbook, right? And so definitely utilize the supermarket. You know, you can do things like interact with different tools there as well, find out about different tools that people have created for the Chef ecosystem. And so that's definitely a huge important piece of how you use Chef and how you're successful with it.
So maybe I know that we already have kind of done all the heavy lifting here on the MRP recipe.
Yeah.
So maybe you can just kind of walk people through just some of the things that are in the recipe so they get a kind of an idea of how to define that.
Definitely. So if we walk through our recipe, right, like the first thing we're going to do is we're setting up our kind of Java scenario, right? And so we're ensuring we have the JDK and the JRE set up. We're setting some environment variables on the machine. We're installing Mongo. We're installing Tomcat. And then we're pulling down some information here. This happens to be the demo data that we're using inside of our Mongo database. We're pulling from GitHub. Don't pull from GitHub. You should probably put that in a different repo, right?
Probably. Yeah, that's part of the demo.
Exactly. And then we're also running some different scripts here, right? And this is a great example of like the first step to writing your Chef code. You don't have to immediately jump into the right way to do it, right? Like the first way is kind of getting something to go green and then start refactoring it, right? So here we're doing a few commands just directly to the shell, but we could be doing some interactions with different community pieces that could have made this a little bit cleaner. But this is a good example of kind of like what a first iteration might look like, right? So we're pulling down the information, we're getting Tomcat set up on the port that we are choosing here, and then we're also pulling down the war that we're going to be serving with Tomcat, right?
It's important to point out, in this particular case, in the recipe, we're pushing the build onto the VM. Now, that's something you ideally really want to separate.
Totally.
And have your build be as part of, your Chef delivery or VSTS kind of process, to push that down, so you keep having updates. But in this case, again, it's a demo to give you the idea of what's possible, right?
Yeah, totally. Or, Chef or VSTS could be used in the case of, at the end of its cycle, it just pushes it up to the repository, tells Chef about it, right?
And right.
So that's
absolutely
also another easily scalable way.
Yeah.
So, and lastly, we're ensuring that Tomcat is started. And you can see the various Chef resources really provide you the orchestration layer. For instance, like if I needed to change the Tomcat config, I want to notify the service to restart, right? Super powerful things within the Chef language that enable you to really automate the things that are traditionally hard to set up, right? So we can put it inside a code, and at the end of the day, it's going to be easier to maintain. And so we have this set up, and then we also have our testing scenario to where it's pointed locally at my laptop. It's running on a VM through Vagrant. And so if I were to go back to my terminal here, exit out of the VM that's running, and I'm going to go ahead and destroy it.
So while that's going, we do have a question here, which is from Michael, that says, what is the story with the DSC Chef integration within the cloud? So there is a long answer to this, and in fact, if you go watch the Jeffrey Snover ChefConf session, he spends like half an hour on just kind of really answering that question. But in short, DSC and Chef are better together. It's not you pick Chef or DSC. It's you can use them in conjunction with one another.
And at the end of the day, you have your DSC community and you have your Chef community. And instead of separating those, you can actually really double the size of the community, right?
Yeah.
So you can reuse DSC modules that may do it better in DSC, or Chef modules that might do it better in Chef, right?
Right. So. And in terms of within the cloud, I would say that is relatively irrelevant. It's because DSC and Chef, in terms of the where they interact is on the virtual machine. That virtual machine and that story is going to be the same whether you're in the cloud or whether you're on premises, right? You know, the cloud makes a lot of other things interesting, but as it relates to the recipe and the DSC is kind of moot, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah. Totally. And so I went ahead and destroyed my VM. So I'm going to go ahead and initiate kind of the rebuilding of that VM to ensure mm-hmm. that my chef code will build out that VM how we expected it, right? So it's definitely important to test repeatability before you do your migration, right? So building out the VM locally, it's go ahead and getting it set up, and then it's going to go ahead and run chef on
it. So explain a little click deeper on what you did. So you blew away your local VM.
Right.
And what did you run here to actually get this thing started up? What's going on? Yeah.
It's a great question. So I'm using Test Kitchen in this scenario, right? And Test Kitchen is one of the many tools that's really key to being successful with the Chef ecosystem, right? Okay. And Test Kitchen is built on a driver model, so there's integrations with Vagrant being the driver that we're using right now. Later we'll be using the Azure Resource Manager driver. Great community contribution by one of our community members out in the UK, Stuart Preston Pendrika. But there's integrations with multiple different platforms that you would want to be able to test on, right? And so what we did originally was we just did a kitchen destroy command, and now we're doing a kitchen converge command.
So maybe just to kind of, for the folks maybe not be familiar, so the kitchen is kind of like my core infrastructure,
right?
So, and the recipe is what's configuring what's the kitchen,
it's
right?
More of a harness, right?
Yeah,
like a sandbox,
kind of harness,
right?
Right, so,
Kitchen will do a lot of the heavy lifting of interacting with the platform that you'd like to be able to test on, creating that scenario for you, and then running your chef code locally there for you. So Kitchen is a really key part of really shortening that feedback loop, right?
Yeah, and that's where this is the kind of one of the core hooks to infrastructure as code, because that kitchen driver is what's provisioning the VM in Vagrant, in this case, or in Azure, as we'll see a little bit later.
Totally, right?
Okay.
And this is something that I can run from my laptop. I don't need a lot of infrastructure to be able to set this up, right? And so now we can see it's already built out the VM, it's installed Chef on that VM, and then now it's running through my recipe and updating packages. It's going to go ahead and go through this, and then it's going to go ahead and put my binaries on there as needed.
Okay.
As we're looking at this, I'm going to go ahead and jump over to the slideware again real quick. And we're using Test Kitchen right now, but it's really just a small piece of the entire testing ecosystem that's out there, right? We could be using things like InSpec to do, instead of manually testing your changes after you've created them, you can have that all defined in code as well, right? So like if you expect the web page to be responding with a particular set of content, or you expect like a file to look like something, right? Like just really embracing more of that automated testing scenario. But in this case, we're just using Test Kitchen. We're just using the Vagrant driver currently. So it's not really doing anything like automated testing wise, right? Like we're still going to go in there and ensure that at the end of the day, we have that web page that's responding how we thought it responded the first time. Right?
Yeah. In terms of this migration story that we're focused on for today, it's I want a way to, in this case, Vagrant locally spinning up a virtual machine to test does my infrastructure as code and recipe work.
Right.
Right. And so I get a quick feedback loop on here's the infrastructure, my recipe failed or it works in general.
Yeah.
But as you're pointing out, like there's once you have things in code, you can do all kinds of other stuff that are much more advanced on testing various aspects. Like, is the firewall port equal to this thing? I want to get notifies, alerts, whatever.
Yeah.
All kinds of scenarios that open up. But for just the purpose of migrations, you don't need to worry about all of that right now, right?
At least in our scenario, right?
Yeah, in our scenario,
we're just hoping our code runs.
Yeah, we just want to get this legacy virtual machine to not be so fragile anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. We're just trying to get some kind of sanity to this, right?
Uh-huh.
And so, there's other different kinds of testing here. Like I mentioned, if we wanted to use InSpec for infrastructure testing, ChefSpec for unit testing, there's a variety of different things that we can use here. And then, for instance, if we wanted to use something like Pester, right, on a Windows VM, where if we were using it in conjunction with DSC, it would be a great example. There's some tutorials if you go to Learn Chef as well that really teach you a little bit of that local development. Like, what does writing testing mean, and how does it play into your overall workflow?
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and jump back over here. All right, so we could see that my machine built out correctly, and I'm gonna go ahead and jump back over to my browser, and I'm gonna refresh my page, and hopefully, it responded correctly, right?
So hey,
we now know that we can build out this VM reliably on-premise, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're gonna go ahead and point it at Azure, right? Mm-hmm. And so first thing we're going to do is we're gonna jump over to, we're gonna jump back over to our code, and you know, Test Kitchen gives us a really easy way to describe some of the scenarios. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna edit our scenario. It's gonna be in our kitchen YAML. And in this case, we have, you know, things commented out so we could do our demo without failing, right? And so I'm gonna go ahead and point it to the Azure RM driver here. And I'm gonna go ahead and give the Azure RM driver the information that it needs to interact with the Azure RM API, right? And so now, let's go ahead and actually, yes. So we should see now that it's pointed to Azure, we should see.
We did a kitchen list.
Yes.
So see what kind of kitchens we have open.
Right, exactly, exactly. So it looks like I had one existing in Azure already, so I'm going to destroy that just to ensure you don't call me out on my demo. So let's go ahead and do a kitchen destroy of my VM in Azure. And then we're going to build out the exact same chef code that we did on-premise inside of Azure.
So we just deleted a VM in Azure.
Yeah, super
there
fast.
You, there
right?
you go. Boom. Right.
Didn't even have to open a browser.
Right? Yeah. How about that? Huh?
Right? All right. And so now I'm going to go ahead and do a kitchen converge. And that's going to reach out to the Azure API, say, hey, I need a VM. It looks like this, right? And so while we're waiting for that to go, I'm going to go ahead and jump back to the code one more time here. And see, we can define different like platforms we want to test on, and different like testing suites. So that means, you know, if I have multiple recipes in my cookbook, which is just a way to package up those recipes, right? If I have multiple recipes in there, like maybe I have one scenario where I run these two recipes or these two recipes, right? Like we can define all that as like a matrix, right?
Yeah.
And then we can also say what platforms, right? So if I wanted to test my code on Ubuntu and Windows every time I shipped it, super great way to be able to have that automatically ensured that somebody who has this kitchen YAML, they're most likely going to understand that my cookbook should probably run on those two platforms, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think this is a great time to, while it's provisioning, to answer.
Totally.
There's actually a couple related questions, but we'll take the first one up there. It's Vasuki, I hope I've tried the best to pronounce your name there, says, can you also show some examples on Windows Server, and does the code change?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I did have some examples originally. Just for the sake of timing, you know, Windows does take a little bit longer to provision. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you have different things you're worried about on a Windows system versus a Linux system. Yeah. But what Chef gives you the power to do is you can put that logic inside of Chef to be able to say, I'm running on a Windows system, run this recipe, or I'm running on a Linux system, run this recipe, right?
So maybe, you know, if you even went to the supermarket and just typed like Windows Server, I'm sure we could see the recipe codes that are up there.
Yeah, totally.
And what that would look like.
In fact, as you're searching for different applications, you can actually expand your search options and select Windows as being your supported platform, right? So if we were to search for Mongo, we might not find anything for Mongo, right? But if we do just like a general search for, you know, what cookbooks are supported on Windows, you can see there's the Windows supported platform badge at the bottom there. And so we can see multiple different things that are available for use. You can go download them today and use them on a Windows system, and they'll work right out of the box.
Yeah, the code definitely is different, but it's the same concepts that you're learning here. So whether it's a Linux or a Windows machine, the same flow of pattern you're going to have to do. It's just the code to describe it might be a little different, right?
Totally.
So that's the big thing. And then the related question says from Akram says, I'm pretty familiar with Chef in Linux environments, but I want to try out Chef with Microsoft. Where can I find the major difference, say, in resource names and the replacement for SSH and Windows nodes?
I would say a first step is, you know, going back to Learn Chef again, and I'm going to keep repeating this because that's going to be the primary way that you learn Chef at the get-go. We have a lot of Windows examples there, right? So if I pull up the Learn Chef site, I'll go ahead and do that live. We can see if we go to the tutorials that, you know, a lot of our tutorials include a Windows example. So, you know, you can see how it runs on like a Red Hat system or Ubuntu system, and all of these different tutorials are catered to if you were using Chef on that platform, right?
Yeah.
So it's great way to initially get started. I would highly recommend if you're used to Chef on Linux, you're already going to start about 40% of the way, right? Because you already know the language. But if you want to figure out more of kind of the workflow and like more of the system level operating system things, first step would be Learn Chef, and then definitely check out like the IRC channel or just check out what's available on the supermarket.
Yeah, I would complement that also with the PowerShell DSC.
Totally.
Because again, we mentioned those are great complementary things. There is also a place where there's a ton of predefined PowerShell DSC scripts that's out there, and I believe the Technic Gallery is at least one of the places mm-hmm. that you can find that. And that gives you a lot of base options on configuring the Windows virtual machine code. And that can work together with Chef. So,
totally.
Kind of two different options there to get you going in that space.
Yeah, the DSC story is definitely, I would say, an awesome story for mm-hmm. Being able to see really the power uh-huh. of DSC, but also the orchestration yeah. and more of the community side yeah. behind the Chef ecosystem as well with it.
Okay, I have to say it's an unrelated note to this. You okay. made a comment there, and you're like, we use Ubuntu because Windows is slow, and so I have to touch that one. With Windows, right? I mean, it is something like that where we have a lot of evolution, right? And so spinning up a full blown server GUI VM naturally is going to take a little more time because it's bigger and it's larger. But when you start to add in things like server core, or even what we have as Nano, like a 200 meg footprint or whatever it is, yeah. something like that, like that's really, really fast, right? And so I think that in terms of defining recipes and things like that with Nano and kind of the future of things, that's more of an evolving space. But I think really part of the reason why we use this example is because we had it already there.
We had it ready.
We had it ready to go. So,
and also to show that not just Windows runs in Azure.
Right, exactly.
So
absolutely.
Totally. We all love Linux. We all love Windows.
That's right.
So we're a little impartial there.
Yeah.
So
where are we
jump
at
back
with
to my VM.
With our provisioning? Yeah.
Great question. Let's go ahead and look over here. All right, so it's built it out in Azure. As we can see, if we scroll up. It went and did the heavy lifting for me.
I'm just getting nauseous, man.
It's okay.
So
it's okay.
Fast.
I'm just trying to get to the important parts.
There we go.
We can see where it interacted with the Azure API for us, got it down to the bits that it needed to, and then ensured that it gave us the publicly facing FQDN so we could reach it ourselves, and we'll do that as part of our verification step. But at the end of the day, this was very easy to interact with, right? We just had to give it like my subscription ID and some information about like what machine size I wanted. But this is a great experience for being able to test quickly in Azure, right?
Mm-hmm. So could we maybe see that it's running up in Azure now?
Totally, totally.
Looks like we have a kitchen-244 something.
Yeah,
something
let's see.
Yeah. So while you're pulling that up, I'll answer the other question, but if you want to keep going there and pull it up. Dave says, I understand why we need to evolve to DevOps, but my boss and other management are resistant. What can I do to help them understand the value? There are a lot of different things here beyond, and this is really beyond the scope of our session here, but I do like the question. It's one that I do get. There's a number of different resources that are out there in talking about the business value of things. I'd almost be willing to bet that you're probably going to have a lot of pain points in your organization across dev and ops, right? Common ones that I hear are like developers have a hard time, getting environments. That takes a really long time, right? Ops is like, hey, I hate this pain of having to support this stuff and it taking forever to get to, to the right resolution. And maybe I hate having to spend all this time doing releases once every 3-6 months and we're sitting here blowing our whole weekend just trying to get the bits out into production, right? Cool. So there's a lot of pain points. I'd say identifying the pain points inside the business. And then, there's a number of resources like the Puppet Labs survey is a really great one that gives you kind of business value there. There's Gartner, Forrester stuff that actually talks about the value of DevOps.
A lot more actual reports recently.
There's a ton of
great.
Yeah. There's a ton of data on mm-hmm. why it's a business value kind of thing. Those are a lot of good things. Stuff like if you have an option to do like ALM assessment or DevOps mm-hmm. assessment and consulting with like things like value stream mapping starts to highlight a lot of the the problems across yeah. the whole chain and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different options there, but I'll digress.
And I would highly recommend, like, you know, if you need a fictional way of kind of getting the mindset of that, go read like the Phoenix Project or any of the DevOps books out there.
Right.
It's a great kind of like fictional way to kind of guide yourself through. If I was this person, how would I do it?
Yeah, hand that to your boss and management chain. And I wouldn't say that's, you know, some people I think you maybe overuse that, but it's if there's really no idea of what DevOps is or no desire or idea of how that even matters, the Phoenix Project might get some sparks going, some ideas maybe I should start to see things differently.
And also one thing that we like to, especially at Chef and being a chef for a little while now, mm-hmm. is, you know, start small. Don't try to boil the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. Like, implement Chef or implement some kind of configuration management mm-hmm. On a very small set of machines. Maybe it's a greenfield environment, yep. or maybe it's just, you know, automating one small task on every single mm-hmm. VM, and you see, like, you know, incrementally, you've just saved a mess of time, right?
Cool.
If we're at the Azure portal, and we can see that my test kitchen driver created my resource group here and then deployed into it. And then it, you know, it created a virtual machine and it's running my code on it. And so now if we go back to my terminal, see at the very bottom here, probably just want to enter. All right, so now it's just installing Mongo, and it should be finishing up just a minute here. But one of the things that, you know, going back to just getting a visual of this kind of stuff is, you know, we're using the Azure RM driver right now, but there's a mess of different integrations and drivers for, you know, the test kitchen tool that really allow you to, you know, test on the platform that you choose, and also like how you do your verification afterwards, right? Like I mentioned, Pester, we have InSpec, ChefSpec, ServerSpec, and it's really just a super powerful tool. So let's go ahead and jump back over. Just installing Mongo.
This is a live demo.
Yeah, it
we
is.
Have a lot going on here, right?
Pretty
we're
live.
We're going from base virtual machine that has nothing on it in Linux from the gallery to fully provisioned virtual machine, right?
Yeah.
I could
be also using this to continually bake my images, right?
Yeah.
I could be running Chef on here in order to, let's see, I got a timeout, but I'll go ahead and run that again because my code is idempotent. And so one of the really important things here as well is that, you know, I'm continually testing this, and I'm able to fail quickly, right? Like my failure here just took a minute or so, less than a minute or so. It took me about 10 seconds or so, right? But has to fail when it's live, so we'll give it that.
So, and this is another important thing. You brought up the idempotent aspect.
Yeah.
This is another important benefit and thing with infrastructure as code, right? Like
yeah.
things failed, you apply it again, and it's going to know what's already there, and you can see how it's going a lot faster through the packages that already exist, and that way you can ensure that consistency, right? Now,
totally.
Now, obviously, in this case, that configuration management is kind of a manual thing, because as soon as we hit apply, it's going to keep trying to enforce it, but if you put that that node under a Chef server management, then it should be there. And now it looks like we got it finished.
We finished in like, what, 46 seconds?
46 seconds, there we go, yeah.
Failed quickly, you know. And now I should be able to go up to that publicly facing IP address that I saw earlier. Actually, I could probably just grab it direct from the portal, right? So I'm going to go ahead and go to my public IP here. And I'm going to grab my DNS name that I need to be able to interact with this machine. And I'm going to go ahead and hit it on port 9080.
I think the /MRP.
Yeah, so that was just the base Tomcat page that nobody wants. So we're going to go ahead and go to MRP. And we could see, we're running in Azure. We're using West US Cloud App, Azure.com, FQDN, right? So great example of what that, you know, initial cloud migration could look like.
Yeah.
Obviously, super simple example. But it really, it's more to kind of give you the fundamentals and walk you through the thought process.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's no way in an hour we have time to go through all the details, how to set up the test kitchen and how to get all the chef. But just giving you an idea of the workflow, right? So you could see here, right, just to kind of walk through the model again of the flow, right? Mm-hmm. The first step is, I'd say, probably the hardest step for a lot of folks, especially if you've never done infrastructure as code, right? Is describing your environment and then putting it into code. And you know, there's a lot of options, like we showed you how to do that. But mm-hmm. once you kind of, you know, start to iterate and get that muscle going and get that in, that base environment defined in infrastructure as code, things start to change, right? As you can see here,
definitely.
As you can see here, right? I mean, it was like seconds, seconds for feedback, and minutes to go from nothing
to live.
You feel live. People learn that way, right?
Totally.
And you've got a VM in Azure that's the full thing,
exactly.
Right? It's the full infrastructure, and if something changes, you can delete it, run it again, like you just did that, right?
Exactly.
Which is a different game than you were in before, right? With this fragile thing that you couldn't touch.
John
and
made
don't want to do it.
The last episode.
That's right. The John thing. Yeah. John is going to be a different kind of situation
now. Things, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things we'd like to call out is that we open sourced this demo and we uploaded it to the Chef Supermarket. It's called MRP APP. As we had it open there, if you go to the Chef Supermarket, supermarket.chef.io, and you search for that MRP APP app, you'll be able to see that cookbook, use it, and create your own demo scenario, right? And it could definitely be complementary to the Loading Chef stuff. And the last bit really is just how important the community is to Chef. And that's really, as David, as I'm sure you've seen, and I've definitely seen, a differentiating factor between how infrastructures have traditionally managed their companies and people really have traditionally managed their infrastructure versus how when they embrace DevOps and they embrace Chef, that community factor, not just the code community as we saw in Supermarket, but also the people community, right?
Yeah.
Making that internal community is super valuable. Sharing code internally, and I'm sure you've seen that really successful at other companies as well.
Yeah. So I just think about we do have back in May at the Ignite conference, we did me and Stephen Murawski did an interview with Kay Kara.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And they stated in that interview that was one of the main reasons why they decided to move forward with Chef is because of the community aspect and helping their teams move from we've never done anything with Ruby or infrastructure as code to we got to get in and figure this out, right? And that was one of the reasons why they decided to go with that.
Totally, yeah. Totally. And it's not just the code community. It's also the people community. So there's vast amounts of different DevOps mm-hmm. meetups, Chef meetups. Highly encourage everyone out there to just go look for a meetup local to you. And if there's not one, see about starting one. Right, it's a great opportunity to be able to interface with different people who might be using Chef or some other tool in a different mm-hmm. way. But really to just gain those ideas and find more interesting ways to use the tooling. Mm-hmm. And also, one other thing I'd like to call out is that if you can't use the publicly facing supermarket, right, because we all have standards, we all have things that we can't just immediately dig through, you can also deploy a chef supermarket internally. And so the supermarket is open source, even though it's run publicly on supermarket.chef.io. You can also go and deploy an internal supermarket if that's the way that you want to be able to communicate code with other people within your company, right?
Cool. Yeah. So we got, I think, another resource slide here. And
yeah.
So we have, we are going to have another episode. So we don't have any definite time or definition of that right now, but
it'll be great.
Yeah, it will be awesome. We can't tell you exactly.
It's so great, we can't tell you what
right,
it is.
That's right, so super secret right now. but we are going to, so tune back in for that. And then, of course, there's Chef on the Azure Marketplace, right? We mentioned earlier that there's a couple Chef server images that are up there. And then, you can do things like with the Azure RM driver and have Chef as one of those things that helps with the connection.
Totally, and making testing easier.
That's right. That's right.
And also, one thing we'd like to call out too is there's the easiest way to find the most up-to-date information with Chef on the Azure ecosystem is chef.io/solutions/Azure. That's going to be the easiest way for you to hit a one-stop shop and immediately deploy things out of the marketplace. It'll direct you right there. But that's definitely going to be the first place that you want to go if you want to just learn about how Chef works on Azure. And then also, there's another series that's hugely, hugely helpful, right? And I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, but it's a DevOps Dimension series.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So we started the show not too long ago, but it's really, we got like, I think, two or three questions about DevOps and kind of more opinionated on the topics of what's going on there. And so DevOps Dimension might help you and your organization on making that kind of shift from people who have done it already, right? So, one of the first episodes we talked to the service engineer and dev person who've kind of gone through that shift and how that changes their roles. He's also interviewed Nordstrom and how they kind of help some tips on them, how they've made a DevOps transformation, right? We've got another episode with Bing and how they do experimentation and testing. We've got a lot of more interviews that are really applicable for anyone, not regardless of whether you're doing Microsoft or Linux or whatever, but you're just interested in the DevOps space, and you know, we're interviewing obviously people from in and outside of Microsoft, so totally. That might help you out.
Totally. Yeah. Awesome. So thank you all for tuning in today. I don't know if David, if you want to say anything else.
No, I think we're good. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, all thanks right. for thanks so much for tuning in.